Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for November the 7th, 2022. This is a midweek bonus episode. On today's show, we are honored to be joined by Brian Gu, who is the president and vice chairman of XPeng Motors. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EVs forum moderator and Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is Tom Malogny, Inside EVs editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. And we also have Kyle Connor from Out of Spec Studios. He puts together videos for the Inside EVs YouTube channel as well. Okay, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the show. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome everybody. And thank you so much for joining us this morning, Brian. I'm excited to learn more about XPeng. Your company is such a great example of a new generation of automakers, super ambitious, technology forward, and electric. Now, please feel free to correct me if I have any of this wrong, but I understand that in less than 10 years, maybe closer to seven, XPeng has developed technology and launched four different models, and last October hit a milestone of 100,000 vehicles produced. And it seems like you're just getting started. You've expanded your original factory. You're building two more. You've got a new platform with 800 volts that uses efficient silicon carbide power conversion that can charge cars from 10 to 80% in only 12 minutes using a new 480 kilowatt fast charge platform that you've also developed. You have a very advanced driver assistance system called XPilot 3.0 with 3.5 coming out soon. There are plans for a flying car. You are now selling cars in Norway as well as China, and I imagine plan on selling in a lot more markets as well. So what is driving the company forward at this pace? Like, what is the impetus, the motivation for this fast growth?
Well, thank you, Dominic, and very glad to be on the program. And you actually summarized very well. I mean, in less than a minute, we have a very comprehensive description of what we're doing today. And yes, it's correct that we're doing a lot because we think there's huge change happening in the marketplace. We start to see the energies, you know, change from, you know, traditional ICEs to electric vehicles. But more importantly, I think we believe that the phenomenon of a smart EVs actually will be defined by the smart capabilities in the long run. And that's what we actually intend to do from the very beginning. XPeng, when we actually started this venture, you know, about 7 years ago, we actually had this vision of bringing smart vehicles to you know, everyday life. And that smartness will be defined by a number of areas, including autonomous driving capabilities, about, you know, including smart cabin, smart, you know, sort of connectivity, and everything that I think can change the user behavior and overall mobility as we know it. So that's sort of what really excites us in terms of the ability to, you know, propel forward that vision and utilize, you know, not just the traditional auto, but the technologies from software, from AI, from big data, from sensor, from, you know, computing, and all these tools to bring, you know, about this change. And I think we're also very fortunate that we actually in a very important inflection period of time that actually really causing these, you know, big, you know, I think shifts in the marketplace. I think the, you know, consumer behavior actually is now ready to receive, you know, smart EV, you know, products. At the same time, I think people, governments around the world are actually supporting this transition and agenda. So I think all the forces actually align to really bring about, you know, this, you know, huge revolution as we see it.
Thank you so much. I know, Tom, do you have a question? Oh, you're muted there.
Yes, thanks. And nice to see you again, Brian, even if it's virtually. I think we did speak in 2019 at the Guangzhou Motor Show, I believe, when the P7 was being introduced. So it's been a while, but nice to see you again. I have a question about the factories. One of the things that fascinates me is how XPeng built their own factory and immediately started two more. That's incredibly unusual. In China, a lot of times the startups use existing factories to build for them. Like, for instance, NIO. They don't have any of their own factory. And now you have one up and running and you're building two more. And you know, the capacity you're currently at obviously wouldn't necessitate three factories. So you must have plans on selling a lot more cars. Can you talk a little bit about capacity and why you'd need to go into three factories in the first few years you've been in business?
Well, I think, to answer that question, there's a number of areas I think I want to address. First of all, the questions about contract manufacturing versus self-manufacturing, right? I mean, that's a very, distinct strategy. To be honest, that we actually started with contract manufacturing. As you remember, our first product, the G3, was made in our partner's plant in Zhengzhou, from the beginning. And as a young company, I think that's probably the most efficient and quickest way to gain manufacturing sort of capability and deliver the product to the customers. And we did that for the first product. But then soon we realized that, without the capability of manufacturing, you actually have, quite a few disadvantages. Even though contract manufacturing is a model that is available, but because of obviously dealing with the regulatory framework, dealing with customer needs and rapid sort of a scale that we want to achieve, contract manufacturing may not be the most efficient and sometimes does not have the ability to control the quality as well and results of the product. So that's why we actually moved from contract manufacturing to self-developed manufacturing with our own plant in Chaoqing. That first plant that we developed and really give us ability to control our manufacturing, to lower the cost, to achieve the economy of scale, and also ultimately to build better qualities. So I think there's a transition from the contract manufacturing. As you get more mature and you want to really control your destiny and quality, I think bringing in-house is actually the direction where everybody is moving towards. So that's the first part of your question. Second part is that why we need more and how do we see the capacity increase for manufacturing? First of all, our plant in Chaoqing is already over capacity. We are, we have been producing above our design capacity for quite some time already. So that, which means that, to support our growth, we need more manufacturing capacity. We did a few things. First of all, we are doubling the design capacity of the existing plant from 100,000 to 200,000. So with additional shift, it can be probably closer to 250,000 if we need it in the current plant in Chaoqing. And then there are two other plants, as you mentioned, that's about to come online this year and next year, which will bring additional 200,000 design capacities. And with additional shift, that will also be close to 300,000. So combined, by the end of next year, we'll probably have a capacity above 500,000 that we can utilize for our growth. We are seeing tremendous amount of growth right now in the business. Last year, we actually grew, close to 300%. So we actually, on a yearly basis, we delivered about 100,000 vehicles. And I think manufacturing number will probably be higher than that. And this year, we have hopes that in a robust growth will continue. So to really support that growth trajectory, you do need that kind of, capacity in the manufacturing plants. And then the third part of your question is that why you build three? Why don't you build a big one in one city and then a huge capacity? I think that's strategy when you have a much more steady and predictable demand. So right now, obviously, we want to be nimble. That's why we want to build factories faster, quicker, a response to the market, sort of more flexibly. At the same time, I think in China, there's also the government incentive for you to build plant in the local regional areas where you can also get some of the support to help you build reputation, brand, and government support for that regional sales. So having multiple plants give us ability to have multiple areas that we receive government support and consumer awareness in those regions as well. So there's some added benefit there.
Wow, that's pretty neat. What sort of international ambitions does XPeng have? Like we see that you're already in Europe, I believe in Norway, but you do have some offices in Mountain View, California. So when could we maybe buy one in America? Is that like on the roadmap somewhere?
Well, first of all, we always want to be a global company because I think with the investment in technology and the beautiful designs of our product and the you know the business model that we are in our sort of really honing in China, we think it should not be limited to a China market play. No, I think we should be bringing our technology and products to global customers, which we believe are very competitive. So I think we have aspirations to be global, and we started doing that over a year ago with Norway, as you mentioned, as the first market that we have tested the potentials. But I would say, you know, those sales right now in Norway, and you know, will expand to probably a few other countries very soon, and probably to a wider group of European countries by next year. It's still, I would say, our exercise of trying to build presence and infrastructure and brand to make sure we are ready for international expansion. So we actually have hopes that, you know, in the later products when we design, we actually have products that specifically, you know, are introduced for European market instead of exporting China, you know, products. So I think that will take time. And also building up the, you know, the stores, the service centers, the charging solutions, and also brands to consumers will take time. So I think for us, you know, we'll have to do that, you know, step by step. And I think, you know, obviously Europe is a very good market to start with because they have high penetration rate. There is also easier access for, you know, foreign companies because apart from a few countries, most of those countries are welcoming, you know, global brands. And I think we do think Europe can actually utilize our technology, which I think will be competitive when we look at the peer products. But you know, I don't think we will stop there in Europe. We'll probably, you know, be moving on to additional markets, but that will take time. It will probably be a step, you know, by step process. And US is not an easy market to crack. It is big, but also it has been dominated by a number of local players as being, has a strong home advantage. So before we access the US market, I think we need to be well prepared to really, you know, build our global capabilities. So that probably will take some time.
Right. So Kyle, did you have a question?
Oh, I have so many. I wanted to say I've actually been a huge fan of XPeng cars for a long time and was trying to line up driving one on my last trip to Norway, but I think we're going to do this again pretty soon. I'm much more on the product side. So, you know, when it comes to actually driving the cars and evaluating the vehicles, that's kind of where I fit in. But I have to ask you about one specific feature that is, I think, the best thing to ever happen in automotive. And it's a little bit silly, but that's okay. Our audience knows I'm a little bit silly. So, you know, in the G3, this little thing on the roof where mm-hmm. when you get out of the car, you can have your phone and it can take a picture of you. How did you come up with the selfie cam on the roof of the G3?
Well, I think it's, you know, like you said, it is a very interesting, you know, thought that we want to make the product very much internet-like. People can really use it and to play with it and really customize it and then can distribute, you know, pictures and videos. So with that intention, I think we designed that roof camera. We want that to be, you know, really someone that we can actually build around the excitement about utilizing the product. At the same time, I think, you know, obviously for our first product, we're actually very bold in terms of experimenting some of the features. And obviously some of the features today you can say, oh, that's probably a little too, you know, too niche for some of the users to use. And also sometimes, you know, the product may not be perfect because obviously, for example, that camera, the resolution was not very high. So it limited some of the, you know, applications that we are intend to do. We want to, you know, facial recognition to find your, if you pick up someone, we say, oh, can you actually use that camera to find someone in the crowd? So, you know, your relative is coming to, and you're picking them up at the airport. I mean, all these sort of things we think are very cool, but later on we'll realize that actually it's not easy to make those into consumer features. But we tested, we experimented because we have a very innovative thinking about how we want to use our product. So I think from the G3 now towards P7, P5, G9, you can see that our product become more and more mature and become really the features that become a lot more easier to use and just addressing larger needs of drivers that we cater to, and I think those are reflective of the evolution a company has gone through to become more and more adapted to your customer needs.
Yeah, the G3 with the camera, though, still will go down in history as one of the most interesting pieces of automotive, I think. I absolutely love it. I got to play around with a P7 in Munich, actually, recently, back in September, and was just blown away by, of course, the presence, the styling. Like, it all seemed really good. And, of course, I haven't driven any. I don't know, sort of the nitty-gritty. But where do you go after P7? Because P7 is still 400-volt architecture. It's still, I would say, sort of in that Gen 1, Gen 2 style of vehicle. Where do you see your products going? Is it focusing on super fast 480-kilowatt charging? Is it big range? Is it both? What do you think?
Well, I think, all our products is, scheduled to have regular updates. Obviously, we have the software update we do like a quarterly or even more frequent than that. But even at the high hardware level and the appearance level, we can see that the G3 we had a makeover last year, which we rolled out G3i. It's a very popular model now, given the appearance may become even more attractive, I think, to especially catering towards some of the female drivers. P7 will get a makeover. I would say you can anticipate that, and that makeover will be quite significant because it will become we need to make sure that P7 will have the most latest sort of platform features like charging, like autonomous driving, as we have in the latest models. So obviously G9 will have the leading charging and autonomous driving platform. If we update the P7 and with the new look, you will have the same specs and system and capabilities. So that's something we actually are anticipating will be a very exciting catalyst for the P7 lovers.
Cool. Let me jump in, Dom.
Sure.
Brian, I'm interested about supply chain management. Now, we're hearing, this has been challenging times for all the automakers dealing with supply chain issues. How's XPeng dealing with that? How's it affecting your business? Give us a little bit on supply chain.
Well, supply chain is an issue for quite some time already. I mean, I think, there's a compounding factor, right? There's the global manufacturing, chip shortage. There's the COVID-related logistic, hassles. There's lockdowns of, cities. So we had to deal with a number of different reasons. And it's not just one product. It's a number of different products. Chips, obviously, has been talked about as, one main source of constraint. Started probably by mid last year. It's still going on, and I think it will linger through till the end of this year. And those are not because one or two companies, because it's broader than that. I mean, in our P7, for example, we have more than 2,000 chips used in different components. And in any given time, there could be, a handful of chips that just in difficult supply. So as a company, you need to be very nimble to address these issues that just come out of nowhere. There's sudden, lockdown in a China city. There's a lockdown in Malaysia. There's a fire in some foundry. There's a labor, a shortage. There's a COVID locked shutdown of the factory. I mean, you name it. There's a lot of these reasons that we have seen in the past. So first of all, you have to be very nimble. Lucky for us, we're still a young company. We are not, delivering and manufacturing hundreds of thousands or million vehicles a month. So we have the ability to really find, the quantities we need to deliver the vehicles that we do. The second thing you do is just to really work hard to find alternative source of supplier for different parts. You know, if you have, you know, five different, you know, suppliers, the chances are you're safer. But that will come at a cost. First of all, it takes a lot of money and effort and time to develop alternative source of suppliers. You have to test them. You have to make sure it works. So it takes, you know, many months. It's not like you can just plug in and make it work. So we actually do spend a lot of time, a lot of effort to find critical alternative suppliers for our components that, you know, brought up some cost, I have to be honest, but also it gave us the comfort that we actually can weather some of these challenges. So I think, you know, we just need to be work extra hard and really be nimble and, you know, treat this like a, you know, everyday business. You know, it's really something that for every company, I think securing that supply chain security is the number one priority right now.
So sticking with supply chain for a moment. So that's the chip situation, but that's a temporary restraint right now on production, I feel. But coming up and even more in the future, I think batteries will be a big, maybe a constraining factor for a lot of companies. I like to think with the transformation from internal combustion to electric, the company who can produce the most or obtain the most batteries can sell the most cars, electric cars. So I know you're very, so XPeng does a lot of technology development inside the company, so you can differentiate yourselves and, you know, have your own product, you know, XPeng product. So does that extend to battery technology as well? And do you have like a, what's your future, how do you look at battery supply?
Well, I think first of all, you know, as a company that, you know, still young, we consider ourselves still young, and we're still need to be very focused on resources and capital. Battery cells may not be the right place for us to deploy a lot of capital, right? Because it has a mature, supplier list, and there's, you know, huge capital need in order to build up that capability. So we work with leading players that we think are high quality and have the capacity to support and support us for the growth, like CATLs and others. But I think I actually see huge capacity coming online for battery makers, both in China and abroad. They're growing. I think the capacity is growing faster than the industry. Okay. So I would actually expect in a couple of years, you will start to see probably more, supplier than the situation will change quite a bit in terms of the dynamic, the balance, the equilibrium. And also, I think the battery, I think, is an area that I don't expect to see huge transformational technology. I think everyone, there's no one company say, oh, I just gonna come up with something that will really revolutionize and everyone else will just go to the wayside. I think, you know, it's steady increases in terms of cost, in density, in terms of safety, etc. So I think we'll be dealing with a number of high quality suppliers and I think we're confident that we will get the support to have, you know, make sure that you'll have the capacity to support our growth.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So that super fast charging speed, that's predicated on your software, your charging software, basically.
Well, it's both hardware and software. You cannot, you know, for charging speed, you need to have, first of all, the car should have the high voltage platform that yes. can receive the super speed. You need a silicon carbide technology so it doesn't, you know, overheat in the transmission. So you need to have a different chip design. The charging technology, you need to also make sure, you know, both in terms of the charging gun to the car supports that system. So it's a comprehensive technology that you need to develop. For us, I think we spend a lot of effort internally to come up with the technology and platform. But we also work with, you know, various important partners to make sure that every step of the way we have the right pieces to enable that technology So I think you know, we're confident that by the time we introduce G9 with the high voltage charging platform, it will be the best in class in market.
Right.
That's great. I know it's Kyle's turn next, but I'm going to jump in really quickly. Brian, you brought up G9. I'm really curious about how that's going to be positioned in the international market. I think it looks great. I can't wait to get a hold of one to drive it. I'm really interested in seeing how well that vehicle does internationally. And I certainly expect it to do really well in China. But could you talk a little bit about how you see the G9 positioned in international markets?
Well, G9, I think, is going to be positioned as a flagship product for us. And we actually will be launching the G9 in the European market probably, you know, a few months after we launched in China. So I think G9 will be launched as an international product. And we designed the product with the international market in mind. It's actually the first product that is specifically designed for international markets, along with the China product design. And also, I think we want to have a flagship product that really showcases the best-in-class technology that we have been developing. You know, it will have the best-in-class charging technology. It will also have the best-in-class autonomous driving technology in there as well with the XPILOT 4.0 architecture. And I think that's something we want to showcase to the global customers as well. I think the G9 will be positioned as a premium SUV, and you know, competes with the like you know, BMW X5 or Audi Q7 other I think similar size of premium SUVs. And I think given its specific features and the smart capabilities, I think it will stand out in that group, and it's very, I would say, differentiated in the way that you will be driving it.
Right on.
Okay.
So, Kyle, do you have a question?
Yeah, I could talk about XPeng all day. This is great. So cool to have you on, Brian. I guess in terms of your European market so far, I got to see one on the road in Norway, which was awesome. I was driving by and a G3 went by. I was like, that's really cool. So who's buying these cars? Where's your competitive advantage over an established automaker that someone might be more comfortable with from a European side, such as BMW or Mercedes? You know, they've seen them on the roads for 100 years now, and now you have a new company coming in. How do you market the cars, and how do people even learn about XPeng in emerging markets?
Well, I think that's a very good question, and we want to answer that question with real on the ground experience. That's why we started the effort over a year ago, and still, I would say it's you know, we not intend to have large number of cars on the market on the road, because I think you know, before we actually are confident about you know, our brand and selling in large, you know, quantity and service in large quantities, we want to make sure we are prudent in that approach. So I think right now, I think it's still a small batch of our products. It's in hundreds, probably at over 1,000 or something in that range. So it's still, I would say, number wise, not significant. It's and then I think the people who buy our products will likely to be the people who actually are very keen to get, you know, differentiated products and try them. But I don't think we have the, you know, widely recognized brand in this European market yet. We need to develop that with obviously all the work that we're doing on the consumer side. We also don't have the, you know, the huge infrastructure a lot of the OEM has developed on the ground. We have a partner that's, you know, our distributor that's selling some of our products right now in Norway, but it's still a limited, I would say, capabilities. It's a new venture, and you know, they don't have the experience of selling our products, so you will have to, you know, take time for them to learn, and we need to develop, you know, all the solutions for the European market: service centers, charging, you know, network, and all these content that we need to. That drivers can use in our vehicles, the map, the music, and so forth. So needless to say, it's a work in progress, and we want to take the next year or so to make sure we have those infrastructure so to support the launch of a real product that we think actually can sell well in larger quantities.
Can you talk a bit more about that charging network? Because Europe already has a really high density sort of, you know, with Ionity, with ENBW in Germany, with, you know, countless charging brands. Circle K, for example, in Norway has chargers at almost every fueling station. So where's the need to build out more or proprietary charging? Because the cars are using CHAdeMO or CCS for European markets.
Well, I think, first of all, we're evaluating whether we will be building the proprietary supercharging network in Europe or not. I mean, that's still, I think, a decision needs to be made on each of the market. And we may have some because we want to make sure our fast charging technology can be enjoyed by our customers. But do we need to build a very broad and comprehensive network? That may not be the case. And also with the scale we're talking about in the current plan, we may not need that for quite some time. So I think there's a, you know, definitely, you know, a balance that we need to achieve. But that being said, I think ultimately, I think, you know, the product needs to, you know, be able to showcase the capability. So maybe working with some existing network of charging, you know, sort of providers and work with them on some of the technology front will be able to give us the ability to provide such a benefit to our customers.
You want to take one, Dom?
No, go ahead. You're good.
Okay, I've got a ton of them for Brian, like Kyle. Brian, this will be a two-step question, if you don't mind. Number one, you know, you hear a lot of companies talk about their sustainability efforts, and you know, I had the opportunity to go over and meet with XPeng officials and visit your headquarters and so forth. So I know XPeng is absolutely focused on sustainability. We just don't hear a lot about it. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about that for a minute. And then second, the second part of this question, even though it's totally unrelated, you know, battery swap. Some of your, or at least one of your competitors out there seems to be heavily invested in battery swap. And that's not the direction that you're taking. Could you talk a little bit, have you thought about getting into battery swap? Is it something you might do in the future? So sustainability and battery swap, those are my two.
Well, those two are you know, big questions. I think, first of all, sustainability, you know, obviously is part of our ESG agenda, right? I mean, it's, you know, we actually as a company has committed ourselves to a very strong sort of standard, a high standard of ESG. We actually, you know, published our first ESG report just a few months ago, and we're proud to receive a ESG rating of AA from MSCI, which is probably the highest auto rating for any auto companies. So I think that, you know, gave us at least the initial sort of, you know, the position to be, you know, viewed as a, you know, a premium ESG name. But I think ESG is a very broad and very, you know, comprehensive agenda you need to really, you know, practice and to hone in, you know, consistently as a company. We actually, you know, for example, design our product with very strong environmental goals. There's a carbon sort of neutrality agenda, you know, every company is now adhering to in China. It's a big policy for the Chinese companies, driven by the state, you know, sort of a mandate. You know, for our manufacturing processes, we have a very strong environmental sort of consideration. All the new plants that we built will have, you know, solar powered roofs and that generate, you know, renewable energy for us. It will have the waste treatment, water treatment that recycle almost 100% of the wastewater, so nothing escapes, give us a better environmental impact. And also solid waste, we actually also recover quite a bit, more than 90%+ of that to be in the recycles. So I think as a company, you know, along the value chain from, you know, the design, was the technology, was the manufacturing, and ultimately the use case. You know, obviously our product is zero emission when it's used, and then also making sure that, you know, it has the highest efficiency in terms of the EV drivetrain. All that, I think, is placed into our sustainability and ESG sort of agenda. So as a company, I think we are very mindful. This is a direction we're Basin. We actually are also looking to energy storage, solar-powered storage for charging potentially, and other areas that potentially can also have a meaningful impact on the carbon footprint. So needless to say, it's very important to us, and we have organized at board level our ESG committee, and which actually, you know, have a strong mandate look at the company aspect, various aspects of the company. So that's to answer your the first question. The second question on the battery swap is, you know, it's been talked about for quite some time. NIO employs a battery swap, and they have been doing that for all their products. But you know, we actually have looked at, you know, the economics of battery swapping, and we think it's probably not going to be feasible for us if we want to provide comprehensive and efficient and low cost solutions to our drivers. I think battery swap is a cool concept, because you can say, oh, it reduces the time, and it basically it's hassle free. But at the same time, I think it also increases a lot of cost for a company. You have to have, you know, build enough of these battery swapping stations to be economically, you know, viable, you know, to use, and also these has to be operated, and rather than, you know, charging station, people just charge themselves. The battery swapping stations need to be operated. They need to have inventory of batteries that cost a lot of money, and it's a significant inventory cost. And also, as a car manufacturers, you need to have uniform batteries. And nowadays, you know, it's hard to imagine a big car and small cars use same size batteries. And it limits your ability to be innovative in terms of car design. And I introduce a lot of cost in manufacturing of your product. So I think there's a number of these issues we think are really limiting the growth and economic appeal of battery swapping. On the other hand, for our drivers and our car price point, really targets the mainstream drivers. Having, you know, fast charging as a solution is probably the most efficient. It's much lower cost to build, to operate, and also I think the customers are used to charging, and obviously, you know, there are, you know, bottlenecks in certain period of time or certain locations, but I think overall the rapid focus in terms of deployment of our charging infrastructure will make this actually, you know, more and more a normal course for the drivers. So I think it is something that we have compared, we have did the analysis, and we believe that, you know, our drivers will probably appreciate the fast charging as most efficient and lower cost solutions.
Brian, can you talk, sorry, just because I know we're running up on our time here, I'm so curious about your driver assistance systems. There are two different versions I think you sell today. So you sort of have different model lines. You know, within P7, you get like a rear-wheel drive and then a super long range and then a performance. But then within those, you can get like sort of a base car or one with all the options. The base car comes with a limited, more or less autonomous driving system or ADAS system. And then the upgraded package comes with the 10 cameras and the 2 LIDARs and the crazy stuff. So can you talk about why differentiate the two and then what the future looks like?
Well, I think the easy answer to that question is that it's a cost issue, right? I mean, you know, in our, you know, again, in our range, you know, the price differences do make it, you know, difference to, you know, customer demand. So not everybody want to pay for the highest end architecture, which costs, you know, probably 10% more in price in some ways, and plus the software, you know, which is another 10% in price. So I think you know, in a way that you will, you know, people will buy P7 because it's beautiful, it's easy to drive, has all the, you know, sort of you know, the features that makes it very, you know, interesting product, but not necessarily, you know, they are willing to pay for the high-end autonomous driving or ADAS capable versions. So because we think there will be that difference, so we want to make sure that we don't lose sight of a certain segment on market, especially when we are developing our brand and market positioning of our smart capabilities. But going forward, I would say that we want to make more and more our models capable of providing high degree of ADAS, which also can support software subscription for additional sales. And I think the mix of that will increase. That's our expectation. As we start educating the market, educating our drivers, they get more comfortable about using the features and they get more sticky and they rely on those features more. And you will start to see that mix going up. So I think it's going to be take time. And gradually, I think with more product that we're introducing, that mix will continue to go up.
Can you explain what the cars can do today? Obviously, they do lane centering, adaptive cruise control, but there's also some logic based off of navigation guidance and some other things. I know you recently held this media drive where it was a huge trip up China. So can you explain how a user would use the system and its capabilities?
Well, first of all, in our existing product already, we have now launched what we call the Highway NGP. Highway NGP is a feature, basically it's like FSD on highway, right? You know, if you know about his FSD. So basically on highway scenarios, it will be able to drive itself. So you basically, you know, set a destination, say I'm from Guangzhou to Shenzhen. Once you actually, you know, put in, you know, using voice and you say, okay, I want to go to Shenzhen, which mall, they'll plot a highway route. And on the highway, they will tell you, okay, this now Highway NGP is allowed because it will utilize high definition map. And in those segments, you basically, the car can drive itself. It will read their own speed limit. They will understand when to get off the highway, to get on highway, to change highways. They actually knows, you know, okay, there's a slow car in front of it. I can go past it. I want to, you know, change lanes to avoid, you know, the congestion. So it's almost driver like a chauffeur in a way. So that's, is already capable in P7. That's called Highway NGP. Another key feature of our P7 is memory parking, or you know, basically, it's actually almost like a level 4, you know, capability. But obviously, we're not gonna remove the driver because it's not permitted in the law. But what it allows you is in a garage setting, it will actually can remember where you parked last time or parked, you know, your parking space. It will go into the garage and drive itself and find that spot and park in there. So basically, you can achieve valid parking, but because obviously we want require a person still inside the vehicle behind the wheel, so it's what we call the memory parking. So that's the two probably main features of XPilot 3.0 that we can achieve in P7. With the XPilot 3.5 that we're launching this year, we actually make the Highway NGP to be used in city settings. Obviously, first in the artery, main arteries of the city roads. But that's very complex. That's why we have LiDAR in the vehicle, because you're now dealing with incoming traffic, with traffic light. You want to make a left turn, we're unprotected, and you need to deal with, you know, people, you know, bicycle, you know, walking, you know, you have dogs, you have, you know, you basically, it's a lot more complex driving conditions. And that's what we think we want to achieve with XPilot 3.5 upon launch. More importantly is XPilot 4.0, which we want to do next year. And that is going to be end-to-end, maybe FSD, if you know, obviously want to use analogy. So basically, from your home to your company parking space, basically, you'll be able to drive yourself. Every scenario can be linked up with that ADAS capability. And that is going to be probably very, very powerful. And I think XPilot 4.0 will be probably the most revolutionary development for the production vehicle.
Wow. Kyle, when XPilot 4.0 comes out, we're going to have to go over to China and drive one of these. Even if we have to quarantine for 2 weeks, it's going to be worth it, because I definitely want to drive the XPilot 4.0. You know, the city NGP is amazing as it is, because, you know, Brian talked about the challenges of city driving. And believe me, I've driven in China many times in the cities. It's even more challenging than what we're used to here. There are cars cutting you off constantly, coming in from all angles, bicycles, electric scooters, you know, dogs. It's like, you know, it's crazy in front of you. And the fact that the new P5 has city level, basically, you know, autonomous driving, not fully autonomous, but, you know, the NGP is amazing to me. I wish I could drive that. I know I can't at this point, but that's amazing that it can navigate through the cities, Brian. And I can't wait to really get a good look at that myself. But
In October last year, we actually demoed the P5, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they actually showcased how it performed in city NGP settings. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of videos actually then. So you can actually probably find those videos. I mean, it was actually very amazing how they deal with city traffic, reading the light, you know, anticipating, you know, people and traffic patterns. It's you know, I think it's amazing feat that we have achieved, you know. Kudos to our team, you know, really doing the research.
Yeah. Well, listen, I want to thank you for coming on. We're up against it on the time now. We're going to have to cut this short, even though we all have a lot more questions. Brian, thank you so much for coming on. This was so, you know, informative, entertaining, all that stuff. I think the Inside EV's followers are really going to enjoy hearing from you. And we appreciate you taking the time out of your super busy schedule to come and chat with us.
Well, thank you very much. Very glad to be able to talk to you all and share our story.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And so I guess that brings us to the end of today's bonus episode. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can follow Tom Logney at Tom Log. That's with two M's. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again on Friday. Ciao.